Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's May 17, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Joanne Barta. Welcome, Joanne. I'm so happy to have you with me.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. As you know, we start at the beginning, and I feel like I've known you for quite a long time, but I'm not sure where you were born. Can you tell us, please?
I was born in Emmanuel Hospital right here in Portland.
Did you spend your growing up years here in Portland?
I did. My dad was from Portland, and my mom was originally from Seattle, so I've spent until I was about 18 in Portland.
So you've seen a lot of changes over the years, but we're going to work mainly with what your life looked like. Is it safe to say that you went to public school?
It'd be safe to say that, but it's not true. I went to Catholic school, so I was raised Catholic, and I went to Holy Family Grade School for grades 1 through 8.
And that's right here in Portland?
Mm-hmm.
Does it still exist?
It does, yeah. We lived about 2 blocks away, and unlike kids today, I was sent off to school on my own when I was 6 years old, and my mom told me which way to go. And so I went to school and then came home at lunchtime and then went back to school every day.
And in those early years, what were some of your favorite subjects or favorite activities?
Oh, wow. Yeah, my favorite subjects. I liked math a lot, and I used to be told I was pretty good at it. So I enjoyed math. And I loved history and social studies quite a bit. Yeah, I liked hearing stories about places and people and how they lived.
I'm guessing that when you were in elementary school, you did not call it math.
No, it was arithmetic. It was, yeah.
As you got older and into junior high and high school, did you continue in Catholic school or what happened then?
Oh, yeah. My parents, they said I had a choice, but really it boiled down to they really expected us to go to Catholic school. So I went to LaSalle in Milwaukee and all 4 years. So it's a college prep school. And even though my parents didn't expect me to go to college, it was certainly an option.
And you mentioned your parents sent us. So how many siblings do you have and where do you fit in the family?
Oh, I'm number one and there's 4 of us. We're all girls. So my dad had really wanted some boys and, it didn't exactly happen. So he taught at Reed College. And so he would just bring home kids for dinner and sometimes they would stay and some lived with my family. So usually those were boys, and I think that made up for the fact that he didn't have any boys.
And did you ever wish for a brother, or did these guys that your dad brought home kind of fill that role?
Yeah, they did kind of fill that role. Yeah, and some of them, even though I'm 65 now, some of them we still are in touch with. They became like part of the family.
And do you know kind of how he picked these particular people? Did they not live in the area? Were there some issues? Do you know how he kind of came up with who ended up living with you sometimes?
Yeah. So usually the ones that ended up living there, they were looking for a place to stay. And he liked them. They liked him. The other ones that came for dinner, we just always had this open house. So there was always plenty of food. And people could just come and have dinner. There was a lot. And so sometimes they would be students of his or somebody that was kind of having a rough time would come. Some just liked to come. One guy would come every Friday and he did his laundry and, just sort of made himself at home.
And what subject was your father teaching?
He taught PE and he was head of the PE department at Reed.
When we hear of Reed College, I have to say, I don't think about PE being sort of right up there. What's that story?
You don't think of that, do you? But he believed that because Reed is so such an academic place. But we know this today more than ever, that you can't have a healthy mind without a healthy body. So he really believed that physical activity was important. So I guess that's the story.
Were you involved with PE or other curricular kinds of activities that were sort of sports oriented at all during your high school years?
No, I wasn't. Kind of funny, huh? We went bowling. He would take me bowling with his bowling class, you know, but no, I didn't really play sports. I mean, we were active. I loved to go hiking and swimming and like that, but no, I wasn't involved in sports. I liked to watch baseball. In fact, one day when I was in high school, I might've been a junior in high school, I got this call to come to the office and I thought, oh shoot, what did I do that I couldn't be getting called to the office? And they said, oh, your dentist appointment is today and your dad's picking you up. And I said, I don't have a dentist appointment. They said, well, your dad's here. He says you have a dentist appointment. So I went out and got in the car and I said, Dad, I don't have a dentist appointment. You got the wrong daughter. He says, no, we're going to a ball game. So I guess you couldn't take a kid out of school to go watch a ball game then, but you could for a dentist appointment. So yeah, we went and watched a baseball game.
So he obviously knew that that was something that you enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
So were you involved in extracurricular activities in high school at all?
Yeah, I helped out on some of the school plays, doing, you know, backstage work. And then I was in a hiking club at school. And I was a TA for the biology teacher and so did extra things after school because I really enjoyed biology and science.
Did you have any jobs during those high school years?
Yes, I did. I started, my first job was in fifth grade. I was a babysitter and babysat for a family. I was kind of surprised that they would ask me, you know, because like in fifth grade, I think you're only like 11 years old, maybe. But so that started my career as a babysitter. And I made really good money because my mom said, so when the kids go to bed, you clean up the house and do the dishes. And so I got great tips and babysat a lot. And then I also did ironing for a woman. She asked if she asked if all I did was babysitting. I said, oh, no, I can do other things. And she said, how about ironing? And my mom had taught us all to iron. And so I said, why, yes, I'm good at ironing and I like it. And so I ironed.
So this money that you got doing these jobs, was that your money?
Uh-huh, it was. And in high school, you know, I bought some of my own clothes and we were encouraged to save our money and think about if we wanted something, would we have the money to do that, and encouraged to work to earn our own money.
And at some point during those years, was there something that you really, really wanted and you got it?
No, no, nothing. No.
I ask that because I wanted a radio really badly. And so I bought myself a transistor radio. So I'm always curious what other people spent their money on.
I think the things that I would have wanted were things that like my money wouldn't have got, you know, like I wanted a horse. I wanted to travel far away by myself. And those were things that were clearly not going to happen in high school.
Perfect segue. Did your family ever take any vacations or trips or do any traveling during those growing up years?
We did. Yeah. We took a couple big trips. When I was in the third grade, we went to California for the summer and we visited relatives and friends. And my dad, he was visiting some colleges there. But that was the first time I saw oranges growing on a tree. And we went to Disneyland, but that wasn't the purpose of the trip. The purpose was just to visit California and cousins and friends there. And then when I was in the seventh grade, my dad had a sabbatical. And so we had 6 months that we traveled around in a motorhome. We traveled around the United States. So that was really exciting. You know, because I got to see all these places that you sometimes read about in social studies class, you know, in grade school, but then to actually visit the Grand Canyon and visit Salt Lake City and different places in Texas, you know, was just so fascinating. In fact, when it was on that trip, we were in, I think it might have been Alabama, and we had to find a laundromat. And I saw on the sign, I went with my mom, that was my job to help her with the laundry. And there was a sign on the door that said wipes only. And I was like, well, mom, where are we going to do the towels? I had no idea that the South was still segregated then. And it was a real shock that, wow, you know, not that Oregon is the most welcoming or has been the most welcoming to people of color, but it was clearly segregated when we were there.
So you graduated from high school. Any awards or certificates at that point that you had received or earned?
No, I was a pretty average kind of person. So no awards.
So what came next, and who and how was that decision made? By whom?
Well, I didn't know what I was going to do. There was a nun at the school that had told me that I really wasn't college material and I should be a secretary. And I was sort of, I mean, it really like shook my confidence. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And my folks didn't push me to anything. And then towards the end of the summer, a friend from high school, she said, we're going out to PCC to sign up. Why don't you come? And I said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I don't want to be a secretary. But Sister Victoria said, that's what I should do. And she said, well, let's just go to PCC. So I went out, and before I knew it, I'd signed up for biology and English and a math class. And so that's how I started college. And then I realized, you know, I can do college. Sister Victoria didn't know what she was talking about then. So yeah, I went there for a year, and then my folks wanted me to go, if I was going to stay in college, they wanted me to go to University of Portland, and I did not want to go there.
That's a Catholic school.
Yeah, it's a Catholic school. And, you know, I had a lot of questions about my faith, and the Catholic Church wasn't quite working for me. I guess you could just say that. So I realized they probably would have helped me, but I thought in my mind that if I wanted to go anywhere else, I'd have to pay my own way. And I wanted an adventure. So I picked the college that was as far away from Portland as I could get and still be in the state of Oregon so I could pay in-state tuition. And that was Southern Oregon. So I had by then saved up enough money, and I knew I could pay for 1 year of school. So I paid my way, had a year at Southern Oregon. I stayed a second year, got a job in the dormitory as an RA. And then I really still was interested in agriculture and growing things. And so I applied to Oregon State and transferred there and finished out my bachelor's and master's in agriculture at OSU. My parents were like, agriculture? But you're a girl, and why agriculture? You're not like us. And it's true, I'm not like them.
Do you know what it was about agriculture?
I've just always loved growing things, always, as far back as I can remember.
So it sounds like church was obviously a really important part of your growing up. Is that a safe thing to say?
Yes, we went to Mass every Sunday. As long as you lived in their house, you went to Mass on Sunday and participated. I had my first communion. I was infant baptized, because that's what you do. And then I went through confirmation, but I had a lot of questions. And I remember my dad saying, would you just don't ask so many questions? Let's just get through this, Joanne. Just go through the confirmation. But I don't know. It was difficult. It was difficult. So by the time when I went away to college, I was definitely in the wondering and searching stage of life. And that continued for quite a few years.
So did you not attend church during those college years especially when you were out of Portland?
Mostly, no. You know, sometimes I would go with a friend who had a church that really they were involved with. I would sometimes go with somebody, but, you know, I just never felt like my questions were answered, where I felt like I belonged. And then I moved to Hawaii after college. I applied for jobs all over.
What kinds of jobs were you looking for?
Well, I was a teacher. I was working on a farm in Tangent. I loved that job. I did that through part of my college years and beyond. And I would have probably stayed there forever, but the farmer and his wife said, "You have a degree and you're a teacher and maybe you should go teach." I was like, "Oh, okay." So I taught in Harrisburg, Oregon for most of a year. And then I just thought, I really want to have an adventure. And so I declined my contract for the second year and applied for jobs everywhere. I applied to the Peace Corps. I applied for jobs in Alaska, one in Kalispell, Montana. I just applied and I thought, I'll take the first job that comes up. And it was a job on an oyster farm in Hawaii. So I just did it. And shortly after I got there, the farm filed for bankruptcy. And so then I had to choose, like, well, do I go back and beg for my job, and or do I just stay here and make the best of it? So I decided to stay in Hawaii for a while. And I found a job working part-time for a gladiola farmer. And eventually I got hired at a shrimp farm. And then I substitute taught and got a teaching job in Hawaii. So I was there for 8 years.
What were you actually teaching? What was your subject?
Oh, I was hired to teach, originally to teach low-level math. Nobody wanted to teach that. Those were the kids that didn't make it and were retaking math. And science for kids who were in a pre-industrial program. So they were mostly interested in automotives or agriculture. And so I tailored the science around those subjects. Then I went on a couple years. I taught home ec. They plugged that for my elective, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. So that was mostly what I taught in Hawaii.
Well, you were good at ironing, so that was a good start.
Yes, it was.
So where in Hawaii? Did you stay on one specific island, or did you move around or during those 8 years?
No, I lived on the north shore of Oahu in a little town called Kahuku. So I lived in that general area and taught at Kahuku. Kahuku was a kindergarten through 12th grade school system. So I enjoyed that a lot.
And again, was church part of your life during this period?
No. And that's where it gets kind of interesting, I think, is that I had this really interesting experience. So I was still wondering and questioning and didn't have any answers. And one day I was cleaning mangoes and this movie came on. I think it was called A Peaceable Kingdom. It was about a Quaker man. So, you know, I would watch TV while I was cleaning mangoes. And I thought, huh, that's kind of interesting. And then my auntie sent me a book and she said, "I just thought of you. And this book, I just think you need to have it." And it was the story of a Quaker man and a young Quaker woman. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Two things about Quakers in a week. And then I was also taking a graduate class at University of Hawaii Manoa. So I'd drive into town once a week. And during that week, I could not find a parking place. I drove all around and I was going to be late for class. And the only place where there was a parking spot was in front of the Quaker meeting house. And I thought, wow, this is a lot of coincidences. Maybe I'll check it out. And so the short story of that is I visited. Asking questions was something they welcomed. And I felt at home. And so I joined the Quaker meeting and was part of that for several years before I moved.
So at some point you left Hawaii. Where did you go and how did you make that decision?
We went to Guam. So I was married then, and it was hard making a living and getting by in Hawaii. You know, it was definitely paycheck to paycheck. And this job came up. So my husband was offered a job with the Department of Commerce in Guam. And I started a national public radio station affiliate on Guam, KPRG. So we were in Guam for 4 years that first time. How we made the decision, it was kind of easy. It was a job for him. So jobs are always good to have, huh?
They help.
Yeah.
What were you doing at the radio station? You said you helped to get it started?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. So when I moved there, there was no NPR and I missed it a lot. So I would ask people like, oh, ask expats, do you miss NPR? What do you think about NPR? And over a year's time, I managed to convince about 11 or 12 people that together we could start a radio station. Because how hard can it be, right? I had no idea at all. But I had a handful of people who had skills, and I was pretty good at prodding people. So we did. We wrote a couple grants and got funding, federal funding, and then we got funding from the Guam legislature, and the University of Guam gave us a building. The CBs did some construction work for us, and so that's how it all came together, and it took about 3 years to build the station, and then we went on the air. It's still on the air now.
Congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually is. It was probably the most exciting job I've ever had.
Yes, radio is exciting and fun. Since I've spent a lot of my life in that business as well. So let's get you to the next step. So you were there for 4 years, and then what?
We went through several hurricanes and lost our house in one of them. And I had another baby there in Guam. So I had two young kids. And it just, you know, my parents wanted us to move back to the States. And it was just kind of hard living those times. We had 15 hurricanes over that time. It was a lot. So I thought, well, maybe it's time to move back. So we moved back to Oregon, and we were there for 4 years. And then went back to Guam for a time. But so it was when I came back to Oregon, it was in 94. And I was looking for a church, you know, wanted a peace church for sure. And a place where kids were really not tolerated, but welcomed. And I hadn't had luck finding a church. People in Portland, you know, they're very busy, especially after you've come from living in the islands. You find that life is very fast. And so it was hard to meet people, hard to find anybody that had time. And so I was visiting churches, and I was pretty discouraged. And that summer, I was also working on a farm in Newburgh, and we were haying then. And one of the guys on the hay truck, he said, well, have you found a church yet? And every week it was kind of the same story. No. He said, why don't you try Portland Mennonite? And I said, well, I'm not Mennonite. And he said, oh, they don't care. And so I thought, wow, huh. So I looked it up, and I went one Sunday and sat next to Marianne Stites and Jay, who was just a little kid then. And then after church, I met Bill and Esther McCoy, and I felt really welcomed. And I thought, wow, here is a peace church, and people have time to visit, and I might be able to make some friends here too. And so that's how I ended up at Portland Mennonite.
Had you heard of Mennonites before then? I assume so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I read a fair amount about Anabaptists and knew a bit about the history, and that resonated with me.
Well, I'm going to jump way ahead. At least I think it's jumping ahead. But I know that at least recently you have been very involved with Mennonite Disaster Service. So how did that come about?
Yes. Well, quite a few years ago, Bill and Esther McCoy, Bill was very involved in MDS, and I had volunteered with Habitat for Humanity when I lived on Guam. And so it, you know, sort of a similar kind of mission, different but similar. And Bill and Esther helped me find a place. I went to Florida and served for a week, and I was really excited about MDS. But like a lot of things, when you have kids and a job and a family, stuff gets in the way. And so I always wanted to serve. And then in the last year or so, I have the time and the ability to serve. So I just really believe in the MDS mission about that, that it's helping people who would not otherwise be able to rebuild their home following a disaster. And that building the relationships with people is just as important as the home that you're helping them rebuild.
So where are some of the places that you've been recently?
Mostly Paradise, California. There was a fire there that destroyed over 90% of the city. Had a population of about 25,000, and now there's only about 6,000 able to live there. The really hard part is that people who are financially able have been able to move back, but people who are struggling because they have to have a job, they've moved away, and then it just makes it really difficult to rebuild a home when you can't live there and you have to be working. So the MDS work there is badly needed. So I was really interested in going last spring, and I thought, well, who might be interested in going? So I called Gail Monicum, and she wasn't able to go at that time. And I called Linda Rush, and man, that Linda, she is a good connector of people. And pretty soon we had a whole van load that went down to Paradise. So that was a lot of fun. And then I went back later that year. I went and they asked if I could come back and be a cook. So I went and cooked in December in Paradise, and then went back in January as a crew leader. And then in March, I went to Okanagan went with Linda and Vicki Kenyon. I talked them into going with me to Okanagan, where there had been a fire that had destroyed many homes. And so we learned how to hang drywall that week. I know Clark and Margaret are going back to Paradise, I think, next week for a week, but I can't go then. I'll be going for the month of July as a crew leader.
So what kinds of work do you actually do? Now, you said that they wanted you to be a cook at one point, but I'm assuming that you were doing actual construction kinds of things. What were you doing, and how did you learn that? Or did you already have some of those skills?
Well, the pretty amazing thing about MDS is they make it possible. There are some experienced people there, and they kind of show you what to do step by step. We did have one really hard job, hand digging footings for the foundation. Clark Upton could tell you more about that experience because he was kind of instrumental in our success on that job. So we cast concrete foundations. We hauled planks of wood. We loaded and unloaded things. We cut wood, cut 2x4s for bracing of rafters. We installed vinyl flooring and learned how to do that. I painted doors and hung doors, cut and put baseboards and trim in houses, caulked around those, installed light fixtures. You just learn to do everything, but you learn it a little bit at a time.
So if you could do a public service announcement for MDS to help to get other people enthused about helping out, what might you say?
Well, first I would say I'm not a great public speaker, but there is truly something everybody can do, that it's a lot of fun. People like to say the food is great there, which it is, but I don't go there for the food. What else would I say about MDS? I think it's just a great way to live out your faith. You know, we all have different gifts, and public speaking is not my gift, but I can go and work hard and realize I made a difference. And not just a difference for the people, but it makes a difference for me too. I get a lot out of it. I get a lot from hearing the stories of the families and what they have been through. There's a youth program every summer. MDS has two sites that focus on youth groups. So Paradise was chosen as one, and that's so I'll be a crew leader with youth groups in July in Paradise. They also have a family camp, so families can come with younger children, and there are age-appropriate tasks that they can do. For older people, there's an RV project, so people can bring their own RV, and you work less hours. You don't work all 5 days a week. You work 4 days a week. And stay in your own RV, which some people find more comfortable. So there really is something for everybody. And it's a great way to make a difference.
Well, Joanne, first of all, thank you so much for the work that you're doing with MDS. But thank you, too, for taking the time to share some of your wonderful stories with us. There are so many more questions, as always. So thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.